shield. That was good. But you need to put your body into it. Get your weight behind the steel, and you'll do more damage than with your arm strength alone. Come, try it again. Drive at me. But keep the shield up, or I'll ring your head like a bell. Instead, Saturn took a step backward and raised his visor. John? He said, in an anxious voice. When he turned, she was standing behind him, with half a dozen Queen's men around her. Small wonder the yard grew so quiet. He had glimpsed Melisande at her night fires, and coming and going about the castle, but never so close. She's beautiful, he thought. But there was something more than a little unsettling about red eyes. My lady? The king would speak with you, Jon Snow. Jon thrust the practice sword into the earth. Might I be allowed to change? I am in no fit state to stand before a king.
We shall await you atop the wall, said Melisande.
We? Jon heard. Not he.
It's as they say. This is his true queen, not the one he left at Eastwatch.
He hung his mail and plate inside the armory, returned to his own cell, discarded his sweat-stained clothes, and donned a fresh set of blacks. It would be cold and windy in the cage, he knew, and colder and windier still on top of the ice, so he chose a heavy hooded cloak. Last of all, he collected Longclaw and slung the bastard sword across his back. Melisande was waiting for him at the base of the wall. She had sent her queen's men away. "What does His Grace want of me?" John asked her as they entered the cage.
"All you have to give, Jon Snow. He is a king."
He shut the door and pulled the bell cord. The winch began to turn. They rose. The day was bright, and the wall was weeping, long fingers of water trickling down its face and glinting in the sun. In the close confines of the iron cage, he was acutely aware of the red woman's presence.
She even smells red.
The scent reminded him of Micken's forge, of the way iron smelled when red hot. The scent was smoke and blood.
Kissed by fire, he thought, remembering Ygritte.
The wind got in amongst Melisande's long red robes and sent them flapping against John's legs as he stood beside her. "You're not cold, my lady?" he asked. She laughed.
"Never."
The ruby at her throat seemed to pulse in time with the beating of her heart.
"The Lord's fire lives within me, Jon Snow. Feel."
She put her hand on his cheek and held it there while he felt how warm she was.
"That is how life should feel,"
she told him.
"Only death is cold."
They found Stannis Baratheon standing alone at the edge of the wall, brooding over the field where he had won his battle, and the great green forest beyond. He was dressed in the same black breeches, tunic, and boots that a brother of the Night's Watch might wear. Only his cloak set him apart. A heavy gold cloak trimmed in black fur and pinned with a brooch in the shape of a flaming heart.
"I have brought you the bastard of Winterfell, Your Grace," said Melisande.
Stannis turned to study him. Beneath his heavy brow were eyes like bottomless blue pools. His hollow cheeks and strong jaw were covered with a short-cropped blue-black beard that did little to conceal the gauntness of his face, and his teeth were clenched. His neck and shoulders were clenched as well, and his right hand. John found himself remembering something Donald Noy once said about the Baratheon brothers. Robert was the true steel, Stannis is pure iron, black and hard and strong, but brittle, the way iron gets. He'll break before he bends. Uneasily, he knelt, wondering why this brittle king had need of him.
"Rise. I've heard much and more of you, Lord Snow."
"I am no lord, sire." John rose. "I know what you have heard, that I am a turncloak and craven, that I slew my brother Corran Halfhand so the wildlings would spare my life, that I rode with Mance Raider and took a wildling wife."
"Aye, all that and more. You're a warg, too, they say, a skin-changer who walks at night as a wolf.
King Stannis had a hard smile.
How much of it is true?
I had a direwolf, Ghost. I left him when I climbed the wall near Greyguard, and have not seen him since. Corrin Halfhand commanded me to join the wildlings. He knew they would make me kill him to prove myself, and told me to do whatever they asked of me. The woman was named Ygritte. I broke my vows with her, but I swear to you, on my father's name, that I never turned my cloak.
I believe you, the king said. That startled him.
Why?
Stannis snorted. I know Janus Slynt, and I knew Ned Stark as well. Your father was no friend of mine, but only a fool would doubt his honour or his honesty. You have his look.
A big man, Stannis Baratheon, towered over John, but he was so gaunt that he looked 10 years older than he was.
I know more than you might think, Jon Snow. I know it was you who found the dragonglass dagger that Randall Tarly's son used to slay the other.
Ghost found it. The blade was wrapped in a ranger's cloak and buried beneath the fist of the first men. There were other blades as well, spearheads, arrowheads, all dragonglass.
I know you held the gate here, King Stannis said. If not, I would have come too late.
Donald Noy held the gate. He died below in the tunnel, fighting the King of the Giants.
Stannis grimaced. Noy made my first sword for me, and Robert's warhammer as well. Had the guards seen fit to spare him, he would have made a better Lord Commander for your order than any of these fools who are squabbling over it now.
Cutterpike and Sir Dennis Mallister are no fools, sire, John said. They're good men and capable.
Uthul Yarvik as well, in his own way. Lord Mormont trusted each of them.
Your Lord Mormont trusted too easily, else he would not have died as he did. But we were speaking of you. I have not forgotten that it was you who brought us this magic horn and captured Mance Rayder's wife and son.
Darla died. John was saddened by that still. Val is her sister. She and the babe did not require much capturing, Your Grace. You had put the wildlings to flight, and the skin-changer, Mance had left to guard his queen, went mad when the eagle burned.
John looked at Melisande. Some say that was your doing.
She smiled, her long copper hair tumbling across her face.
The Lord of Light has fiery talons, Jon Snow.
John nodded and turned back to the king. Your Grace, you spoke of Val. She has asked to see Mance Rayder to bring his son to him. It would be a kindness.
The man is a deserter from your order. Your brothers are all insisting on his death. Why should I do him a kindness?
John had no answer for that. If not for him, for Val, for her sister's sake, the child's mother.
You are fond of this Val?
I scarcely know her.
They tell me she is comely.
Very, John admitted.
Beauty can be treacherous. My brother learned that lesson from Cersei Lannister. She murdered him, do not doubt it. Your father and John Aaron as well.
He scowled.
You rode with these wildlings. Is there any honour in them, do you think?
Yes, John said, but their own sort of honour, sire.
In Mance Rayder?
Yes, I think so.
In the Lord of Bones?
John hesitated. Rattleshirt, we called him. Treacherous and bloodthirsty. If there's honour in him, he hides it down beneath his suit of bones.
And this other man, this Tormund of the many names who eluded us after the battle, answer me truly.
Tormund Giantsbane seemed to me the sort of man who would make a good friend and a bad enemy, Your Grace.
Stannis gave a curt nod. Your father was a man of honour. He was no friend to me, but I saw his worth. Your brother was a rebel, and a traitor, who meant to steal half my kingdom, but no man can question his courage. What of you?
Does he want me to say I love him?
John's voice was stiff and formal, as he said, I am a man of the Night's Watch.
Words. Words of wind. Why do you think I abandoned Dragonstone and sailed to the wall, Lord Snow?
I am no lord, sire. You came because we sent for you, I hope, though I could not say why you took so long about it. Surprisingly, Stannis smiled at that.
You're bold enough to be a Stark. Yes, I should have come sooner. If not for my hand, I might not have come at all. Lord Seaworth is a man of humble birth, but he reminded me of my duty, when all I could think of was my rights. I had the cart before the horse, Davos said. I was trying to win the throne to save the kingdom, when I should have been trying to save the kingdom to win the throne. Stannis pointed north. There is where I'll find the foe that I was born to fight.
His name may not be spoken, Melisandre added softly. He is the god of night and terror, Jon Snow, and these shapes in the snow are his creatures.
They tell me that you slew one of these walking corpses to save Lord Mormont's life, Stannis said. It may be that this is your war as well, Lord Snow, if you will give me your help.
My sword is pledged to the Night's Watch, Your Grace, Jon Snow answered carefully. That did not please the king. Stannis ground his teeth and said,
I need more than a sword from you.
Jon was lost.
My lord? I need the North.
The North?
My brother Rob was king in the North.
Your brother was the rightful lord of Winterfell. If he had stayed home and done his duty, instead of crowning himself and riding off to conquer the Riverlands, he might be alive today. Be that as it may, you are not Rob, no more than I am Robert.
The harsh words had blown away whatever sympathy John might have had for Stannis. I loved my brother, he said,
and I mine. Yet they were what they were, and so are we. I am the only true king in Westeros, north or south, and you are Ned Stark's bastard.
Stannis studied him with those dark blue eyes. Tywin Lannister has named Roose Bolton his Warden of the North, to reward him for betraying your brother. The Iron Men are fighting amongst themselves since Balon Greyjoy's death, yet they still hold Moat Cailin, Deepwood Mott, Torrhen Square, and most of the Stony Shore. Your father's lands are bleeding, and I have neither the strength nor the time to staunch the wounds. What is needed is a Lord of Winterfell, a loyal Lord of Winterfell. He is looking at me, John thought, stunned. Winterfell is no more. Theon Greyjoy put it to the torch.
Granite does not burn easily, Stannis said. The castle can be rebuilt in time. It's not the walls that make a lord, it's the man. Your Northmen do not know me, have no reason to love me, yet I will need their strength in the battles yet to come. I need a son of Eddard Stark to win them to my banner.
He would make me Lord of Winterfell. The wind was gusting, and John felt so light-headed he was half afraid it would blow him off the wall.
Your Grace, he said, you forget. I am a Snow, not a Stark. It's you who are forgetting, King Stannis replied.
Melisandre put a warm hand on John's arm.
A king can remove the taint of bastardy with a stroke, Lord Snow. Lord Snow.
Sir Alistair Thorne had named him that, to mock his bastard birth. Many of his brothers had taken to using it as well, some with affection, others to wound. But suddenly it had a different sound to it in John's ears. It sounded real.
Yes, he said hesitantly. Kings have legitimized bastards before, but I am still a brother of the Night's Watch. I knelt before Hartree, and swore to hold no lands and father no children.
John,
Melisandre was so close he could feel the warmth of her breath.
R'hllor is the only true god. A vow sworn to a tree has no more power than one sworn to your shoes. Open your heart, and let the light of the Lord come in, burn these weirwoods, and accept Winterfell as a gift of the Lord of Light.
When John had been very young, too young to understand what it meant to be a bastard, he used to dream that one day Winterfell might be his. Later, when he was older, he had been ashamed of those dreams. Winterfell would go to Rob, and then his sons, or to Bran or Rickon, should Rob die childless. And after them came Sansa and Arya. Even to dream otherwise seemed disloyal, as if he were betraying them in his heart, wishing for their deaths.
"I never wanted this,"
he thought, as he stood before the blue-eyed king and the red woman.
"I loved Rob, loved all of them. I never wanted any harm to come to any of them. But it did. And now there's only me."
All he had to do was say the word, and he would be John Stark, and never more a Snow. All he had to do was pledge this king his fealty, and Winterfell was his. All he had to do was forswear his vows again. And this time it would not be a ruse. To claim his father's castle, he must turn against his father's gods. King Stannis gazed off north again, his gold cloak streaming from his shoulders.
"It may be that I am mistaken in you, Jon Snow. We both know the things that are said of bastards. You may lack your father's honour, or your brother's skill in arms, but you are the weapon the Lord has given me. I have found you here, as you found the cache of Dragonglass beneath the fist, and I mean to make use of you."
Even Azor Ahai did not win his war alone. "I killed 1,000 wildlings, took 1,000 captive, and scattered the rest. But we both know they will return. Melisandre has seen it in her fires. This Tormund Thunderfist is likely reforming them even now, and planning some new assault. And the more we bleed each other, the weaker we shall all be when the real enemy falls upon us."
John had come to that same realization. "As you say, Your Grace." He wondered where this king was going.
"Whilst your brothers have been struggling to decide who shall lead them, I have been speaking with this Mance Raider."
He ground his teeth.
"A stubborn man, that one, and prideful. He will leave me no choice but to give him to the flames. But we took other captives as well, other leaders. The one who calls himself the Lord of Bones, some of their clan chiefs, the new Magnar of Sen. Your brothers will not like it, no more than your father's lords, but I mean to allow the wildlings through the wall. Those who will swear me their fealty, pledge to keep the king's peace and the king's laws, and take the Lord of Light as their god. Even the giants, if those great knees of theirs can bend. I will settle them on the gift once I have wrested it away from your new Lord Commander. When the cold winds rise, we shall live or die together. It is time we made alliance against our common foe."
He looked at John. "Would you agree?" "My father dreamed of resettling the gift," John admitted. "He and my Uncle Benjen used to talk of it."
"He never thought of settling it with wildlings, though. But he never rode with wildlings, either."
He did not fool himself. The free folk would make for unruly subjects and dangerous neighbours. Yet when he weighed Ygritte's red hair against the coal-blue eyes of the whites, the choice was easy. "I agree."
"Good," King Stannis said. "For the surest way to seal a new alliance is with a marriage. I mean to wed my Lord of Winterfell to this wildling princess."
Perhaps John had ridden with the free folk too long. He could not help but laugh. "Your Grace," he said, "captive or no, if you think you can just give Val to me, I fear you have a deal to learn about wildling women. Whoever weds her had best be prepared to climb in a tower window and carry her off at sword point."
"Whoever?"
Stannis gave him a measuring look.
"Does this mean you will not wed the girl?"
I warn you, she is part of the price you must pay if you want your father's name and your father's castle. This match is necessary to help assure the loyalty of our new subjects. Are you refusing me, Jon Snow? No, Jon said too quickly. It was Winterfell the king was speaking of, and Winterfell was not to be lightly refused. I mean, this has all come very suddenly, Your Grace. Might I beg you for some time to consider?
As you wish. But consider quickly. I'm not a patient man, as your black brothers are about to discover. Stannis put a thin, fleshless hand on John's shoulder. Say nothing of what we discussed here today, to anyone. But when you return, you need only bend your knee, lay your sword at my feet, and pledge yourself to my service, and you shall rise again as John Stark, the Lord of Winterfell.
Tyrion. When he heard noises through the thick wooden door of his cell, Tyrion Lannister prepared to die.
Past time, he thought. Come on, come on, make an end to it.
He pushed himself to his feet. His legs were asleep from being folded under him. He bent down and rubbed the knives from them.
I will not go stumbling and waddling to the headsman's block.
He wondered whether they would kill him down here in the dark, or drag him through the city so Sir Ilyen Payne could lop his head off. After his mama's farce for trial, his sweet sister and loving father might prefer to dispose of him quietly rather than risk a public execution.
I could tell the mob a few choice things if they let me speak.
But would they be that foolish? As the keys rattled and the door to his cell pushed inward, creaking, Tyrion pressed back against the dampness of the wall, wishing for a weapon.
I can still bite and kick. I'll die with a taste of blood in my mouth, that's something.
He wished he'd been able to think of some rousing last words. Bugger you all was not like to earn him much of a place in the histories. Torchlight fell across his face. He shielded his eyes with a hand.
Come on! Are you frightened of a dwarf? Do it, you son of a puxy whore!
His voice had grown hoarse from disuse.
Is that any way to speak about our lady mother?
The man moved forward, a torch in his left hand.
This is even more ghastly than my cell at Riverrun, though not quite so dank.
For a moment Tyrion could not breathe.
You? Well, most of me.
Jaime was gaunt, his hair hack short.
I left a hand at Harrenhal. Bringing the brave companions across the narrow sea was not one of father's better notions.
He lifted his arm, and Tyrion saw the stump. A bark of hysterical laughter burst from his lips.
Oh, gods, he said, Jaime, I am so sorry, but gods be good, look at the two of us, handless and noseless, the Lannister boys. There were days when my hands smelt so bad, I wished I was noseless.
Jaime lowered his torch, so the light bathed his brother's face.
An impressive scar.
Tyrion turned away from the glare.
They made me fight a battle without my big brother to protect me. I heard tell you almost burned the city down. A filthy lie. I only burned the river.
Abruptly, Tyrion remembered where he was and why.
Are you here to kill me? Now that's ungrateful. Perhaps I should leave you here to rot, if you're going to be so discourteous. Rotting is not the fate Cersei has in mind for me. Well, no, if truth be told. You're to be beheaded on the morrow, out on the old tawny grounds.
Tyrion laughed again.
Will there be food? You'll have to help me with my last words. My wits have been running about like a rat in a root cellar. You won't need last words. I'm rescuing you.
Jaime's voice was strangely solemn.
Who said I required rescue? You know, I'd almost forgotten what an annoying little man you are. Now that you've reminded me, I do believe I'll let Cersei cut your head off after all. Oh, no, you won't.
He waddled out of his cell. "Is it day or night up above? I've lost all sense of time. 3 hours past midnight. The city sleeps." Jamie slid the torch back into its sconce, on the wall between the cells. The corridor was so poorly lit that Tyrion almost stumbled on the turnkey, sprawled across the cold stone floor. He prodded him with a toe. "Is he dead?"
"Asleep. The other three as well. The eunuch dosed their wine with sweet sleep, but not enough to kill them, or so he swears. He is waiting back at the stair, dressed up in a septon's robe. You're going down into the sewers, and from there to the river. A galley is waiting in the bay. Varys has agents in the free cities who will see that you do not lack for funds. But try not to be conspicuous. Cersei will send men after you, I have no doubt. You might do well to take another name."
"Another name? Oh, certainly. And when the faceless man come to kill me, I'll say, 'No, you have the wrong man. I'm a different dwarf with a hideous facial scar.'"
Both Lannisters laughed at the absurdity of it all. Then Jaime went to one knee and kissed him quickly, once on each cheek, his lips brushing against the puckered ribbon of scar tissue.
"Thank you, brother," Tyrion said, "for my life."
"It was a debt I owed you."
Jaime's voice was strange.
"A debt?"
He cocked his head.
"I do not understand."
"Good. Some doors are best left closed."
"Oh, dear," said Tyrion. "Is there something grim and ugly behind it? Could it be that someone said something cruel about me once? I'll try not to weep. Tell me."
"Tyrion, Jaime is afraid."
"Tell me,"
Tyrion said again. His brother looked away.
"Tysha,"
he said softly.
"Tysha?"
His stomach tightened.
"What of her?"
"She was no whore. I never bought her for you. That was a lie that father commanded me to tell. Tysha was... she was... what she seemed to be. A crofter's daughter, chance met on the road."
Tyrion could hear the faint sound of his own breath, whistling hollowly through the scar of his nose. Jaime could not meet his eyes.
"Tysha?"
He tried to remember what she had looked like.
"A girl? She was only a girl, no older than Sansa."
"My wife?" he croaked. "She wed me."
"For your gold," father said. "She was low-born. You were a Lannister of Casterly Rock. All she wanted was the gold, which made her no different from a whore, so it would not be a lie, not truly, and he said that you required a sharp lesson, that you would learn from it, and thank me later."
"Thank you?"
Tyrion's voice was choked.
"He gave her to his guards, a barracks full of guards. He made me watch."
"Aye, and more than watch. I took her too, my wife."
"I never knew he would do that. You must believe me." "Oh, must I?"
Tyrion snarled.
"Why should I believe you about anything ever? She was my wife."
"Tyrion."
He hit him. It was a slap, backhanded, but he put all his strength into it, all his fear, all his rage, all his pain. Jaime was squatting, unbalanced. The blow sent him tumbling backward to the floor.
I suppose I earned that."
"Oh, you've earned more than that, Jaime. You and my sweet sister and our loving father, yes. I can't begin to tell you what you've earned. But you'll have it. That I swear to you. A Lannister always pays his debts."
Tyrion waddled away, almost stumbling over the turnkey again in his haste. Before he had gone a dozen yards, he bumped up against an iron gate that closed the passage.
"Oh, gods!"
It was all he could do not to scream.
Jamie came up behind him. I have the jailer's keys.
Then use them!
Tyrion stepped aside. Jamie unlocked the gate, pushed it open, and stepped through. He looked back over his shoulder. Are you coming?
Not with you.
Tyrion stepped through.
Give me the keys and go. I will find Varys on my own.
He cocked his head and stared up at his brother with his mismatched eyes.
Jamie, can you fight left-handed?
Rather less well than you, Jamie said bitterly.
Good. Then we will be well matched if we should ever meet again. The cripple and the dwarf.
Jamie handed him the ring of keys. I gave you the truth. You owe me the same. Did you do it? Did you kill him? The question was another knife twisting in his guts.
Are you sure you want to know?
Asked Tyrion.
Joffrey would have been a worse king than Aerys ever was. He stole his father's dagger and gave it to a footpad to slit the throat of Brandon Stark. Did you know that?
I thought he might have.
Well, a son takes after his father. Joff would have killed me as well, once he came into his power. For the crime of being short and ugly, of which I am so conspicuously guilty.
You have not answered my question.
You poor, stupid, blind, crippled fool! Must I spell out everything for you? Very well. Cersei is a lying whore. She's been fucking Lancel and Osmond Kettleblack and probably Moonboy, for all I know. And I am the monster they all say I am. Yes, I killed your vile son.
He made himself grin. It must have been a hideous sight to see, there in the torch-lit gloom. Jaime turned without a word and walked away. Tyrion watched him go, striding on his long, strong legs, and part of him wanted to call out to tell him that it wasn't true, to beg for his forgiveness. But then he thought of Tysha, and he held his silence. He listened to the receding footsteps until he could hear them no longer, then waddled off to look for Varys. The eunuch was lurking in the dark of a twisting turnpike stair, garbed in a moth-eaten brown robe with a hood that hid the paleness of his face.
"You were so long, I feared that something had gone amiss," he said when he saw Tyrion.
"Oh, no," Tyrion assured him, in poisonous tones. "What could possibly have gone amiss?"
He twisted his head back to stare up.
"I sent for you during my trial."
"I could not come. The queen had me watched night and day. I dared not help you."
"You're helping me now?"
"Am I? Oh, no."
Varys giggled. It seemed strangely out of place in this place of cold stone and echoing darkness.
"Your brother can be most persuasive."
"Varys, you are as cold and slimy as a slug. Has anyone ever told you? You did your best to kill me. Perhaps I ought to return the favor."
The eunuch sighed.
"The faithful dog is kicked, and no matter how the spider weaves, he's never loved. But if you slay me here, I fear for you, my lord. You may never find your way back to daylight."
His eyes glittered in the shifting torchlight, dark and wet.
"These tunnels are full of traps for the unwary."
Tyrion snorted.
"Unwary? I am the wariest man who ever lived. You help see to that."
He rubbed at his nose.
"So tell me, wizard, where is my innocent maiden wife?"
"I have found no trace of Lady Sansa in King's Landing, sad to say, nor of Sir Dontus Hollard, who by rights should have turned up somewhere drunk by now. They were seen together on the Serpentine Steps the night she vanished. After that, nothing. There was much confusion that night. My little birds are silent."
Varys gave a gentle tug at the dwarf's sleeve and pulled him into the stair.
"My lord, we must weigh. Your path is down."
"Well, that's no lie, at least."
Tyrion waddled along in the eunuch's wake, his heels scraping against the rough stone as they descended. It was very cold within the stairwell, a damp, bone-chilling cold that set him to shivering at once.
"What part of the dungeons are these?"
he asked. "Maegor the Cruel decreed 4 levels of dungeons for his castle," Varys replied. "On the upper level there are large cells where common criminals may be confined together. They have narrow windows set high in the walls. The second level has the smaller cells where high-born captives are held. They have no windows, but torches in the halls cast light through the bars. On the third level, the cells are smaller, and the doors are wood. The black cells, men call them. That was where you were kept, and Eddard Stark before you. But there is a level lower still. Once a man is taken down to the fourth level, he never sees the sun again, nor hears a human voice, nor breathes a breath free of agonizing pain. Maegor had the cells on the fourth level built for torment." They had reached the bottom of the steps. An unlighted door opened before them. "This is the fourth level. Give me your hand, my lord. It is safer to walk in darkness here. There are things you would not wish to see."
Tyrion hung back a moment. Varys had already betrayed him once. Who knew what game the eunuch was playing? And what better place to murder a man than down in the darkness, in a place that no one knew existed? His body might never be found. On the other hand, what choice did he have? To go back up the stairs and walk out of the main gate? No, that would not serve. Jaime would not be afraid, he thought, before he remembered what Jaime had done to him. He took the eunuch by the hand and let himself be led through the black, following the soft scrape of leather on stone. Varys walked quickly, from time to time whispering, "Careful, there are 3 steps ahead," or, "The tunnel slopes downward here, my lord." "I arrived here, a king's hand, riding through the gates at the head of my own sworn men," Tyrion reflected, "and I leave like a rat, scuttling through the dark, holding hands with a spider." A light appeared ahead of them, too dim to be daylight, and grew as they hurried toward it. After a while, he could see it was an arched doorway, closed off by another iron gate. Varys produced a key. They stepped through into a small round chamber. 5 other doors opened off the room, each barred in iron. There was an opening in the ceiling as well, and a series of rungs set in the wall below, leading upward. An ornate brazier stood to one side, fashioned in the shape of a dragon's head. The coals in the beast's yawning mouth had burned down to embers, but they still glowed with a sullen orange light. Dim as it was, the light was welcome after the blackness of the tunnel. The juncture was otherwise empty, but on the floor was a mosaic of a 3-headed dragon wrought in red and black tiles. Something niggled at Tyrion for a moment. Then it came to him. "This is the place Shay told me of, when Varys first led her to my bed." "We are below the Tower of the Hand?"
"Yes."
Frozen hinges screamed in protest as Varys pulled open a long-closed door. Flakes of rust drifted to the floor.
"This will take us out to the river."
Tyrion walked slowly to the ladder, ran a hand across the lowest rung.
"This will take me up to my bedchamber."
"Your lord father's bedchamber now."
He looked up the shaft.
"How far must I climb?"
"My lord, you are too weak for such follies, and there is, besides, no time. We must go."
"I have business above."
"How far?"
200 and 30 rungs. But whatever you intend, 230 rungs, and then? The tunnel to the left. But hear me, how far along to the bedchamber?
Tyrion lifted a foot to the lowest rung of the ladder.
No more than 60 feet. Keep one hand on the wall as you go. You will feel the doors. The bedchamber is the third. He sighed. This is folly, my lord. Your brother has given you your life back. Would you cast it away, and mine with it?
Varys, the only thing I value less than my life just now is yours. Wait for me here. He turned his back on the eunuch and began to climb, counting silently as he went. Rung by rung, he ascended into darkness. At first he could see the dim outline of each rung as he grasped it, and the rough, grey texture of the stone behind, but as he climbed, the black grew thicker. 13, 14, 15, 16. By 30 his arms trembled with the strain of pulling. He paused a moment to catch his breath and glance down. A circle of faint light shone far below, half obscured by his own feet. Tyrion resumed his ascent.
39, 40, 41.
By 50 his legs burned. The ladder was endless, numbing.
68, 69, 70.
By 80 his back was a dull agony. Yet still he climbed. He could not have said why.
113, 114, 115.
At 230 the shaft was black as pitch, but he could feel the warm air flowing from the tunnel to his left, like the breath of some great beast. He poked about awkwardly with a foot and edged off the ladder. The tunnel was even more cramped than the shaft. Any man of normal size would have had to crawl on hands and knees, but Tyrion was short enough to walk upright.
At last, a place made for dwarfs.
His boots scuffed softly against the stone. He walked slowly, counting steps, feeling for gaps in the walls.
Soon he began to hear voices, muffled and indistinct at first, then clearer.
He listened more closely. Two of his father's guardsmen were joking about the imp's whore, saying how sweet it would be to fuck her, and how bad she must want a real cock in place of the dwarf's stunted little thing.
"Most like it's got a crook in it," said Lum.
That led him into a discussion of how Tyrion would die on the morrow.
"He'll weep like a woman and beg for mercy, you'll see,"
Lum insisted. Lester figured he'd face the axe brave as a lion, being a Lannister, and he was willing to bet his new boots on it.
"Ah, shit in your boots," said Lum. "You know, they never fit these feet of mine. Tell you what. If I win, you can scour my bloody mail for a fortnight."
For the space of a few feet, Tyrion could hear every word of their haggling. But when he moved on, the voices faded quickly. "Small wonder Varys did not want me to climb the bloody ladder," Tyrion thought, smiling in the dark. "Little birds, indeed." He came to the third door and fumbled about for a long time before his fingers brushed a small iron hook set between two stones. When he pulled down on it, there was a soft rumble that sounded loud as an avalanche in the stillness, and a square of dull orange light opened a foot to his left.
"The hearth!"
He almost laughed. The fireplace was full of hot ash, and a black log with a hot orange heart burning within. He edged past gingerly, taking quick steps so as not to burn his boots, the warm cinders crunching softly under his heels. When he found himself in what had once been his bedchamber, he stood a long moment, breathing the silence. Had his father heard? Would he reach for his sword, raise the hue and cry?
"My lord,"
a woman's voice called.
"That might have hurt me once, when I still felt pain.
The first step was the hardest. When he reached the bed, Tyrion pulled the draperies aside, and there she was, turning toward him, with a sleepy smile on her lips. It died when she saw him. She pulled the blankets up to her chin, as if that would protect her.
"Were you expecting someone taller, sweetling?"
Big wet tears filled her eyes.
"I never meant those things I said. The Queen made me. Please? Your father frightens me so."
She sat up, letting the blanket slide down to her lap. Beneath it, she was naked, but for the chain about her throat. A chain of linked golden hands, each holding the next.
"My Lady Shay,"
Tyrion said softly.
"All the time I sat in the black cell waiting to die, I kept remembering how beautiful you were, in silk or rough spun, or nothing at all. My lord will be back soon. You should go, or did you come to take me away? Did you ever like it?"
He cupped her cheek, remembering all the times he had done this before, all the times he'd slid his hands around her waist, squeezed her small firm breasts, stroked her short dark hair, touched her lips, her cheeks, her ears. All the times he had opened her with a finger to probe her secret sweetness and make her moan.
"Did you ever like my touch?" "More than anything," she said. "My giant of Lannister."
"That was the worst thing you could have said, sweetling."
Tyrion slid a hand under his father's chain and twisted. The links tightened, digging into her neck.
"For hands of gold are always cold. But a woman's hands are warm," he said.
He gave cold hands another twist as the warm ones beat away his tears. Afterward, he found Lord Tywin's dagger on the bedside table and shoved it through his belt. A lion-headed mace, a poleaxe, and a crossbow had been hung on the walls. The poleaxe would be clumsy to wield inside a castle, and the mace was too high to reach. But a large wood and iron chest had been placed against the wall directly under the crossbow. He climbed up, pulled down the bow and a leather quiver, packed with quarrels, jammed a foot into the stirrup, and pushed down until the bowstring cocked. Then he slipped a bolt into the notch. Jaime had lectured him more than once on the drawbacks of crossbows. If Lum and Lester emerged from wherever they were talking, he'd never have time to reload, but at least he'd take one down to hell with him. Lum, if he had a choice.
"You'll have to clean your own mail, Lum. You lose."
Waddling to the door, he listened a moment, then eased it open slowly. A lamp burned in a stone niche, casting one yellow light over the empty hallway. Only the flame was moving. Tyrion slid out, holding the crossbow down against his leg. He found his father where he knew he'd find him, seated in the dimness of the Privy Tower, bedrobe hiked up around his hips. At the sound of steps, Lord Tywin raised his eyes. Tyrion gave him a mocking half-bow.
"My lord?"
"Tyrion!" If he was afraid, Tywin Lannister gave no hint of it.
"Who released you from your cell?"
"I'd love to tell you, but I swore a holy oath."
"The eunuch," his father decided. "I'll have his head for this. Is that my crossbow? Put it down."
"Will you punish me if I refuse, father?"
"This escape is folly. You are not to be killed, if that is what you fear. It's still my intent to send you to the wall. But I could not do it without Lord Tyrell's consent. Put down the crossbow, and we will go back to my chambers and talk of it."
"We can talk here just as well. Perhaps I don't choose to go to the wall, father."
It's bloody cold up there, and I believe I've had enough coldness from you. So just tell me something, and I'll be on my way. One simple question. You owe me that much.
I owe you nothing.
You've given me less than that all my life, but you'll give me this. What did you do with Taisha?
Taisha?
He does not even remember her name. The girl I married.
Oh, yes, with your first whore.
Tyrion took aim at his father's chest.
The next time you say that word, I'll kill you.
You do not have the courage.
Shall we find out? It's a short word, and it seems to come so easily to your lips.
Tyrion gestured impatiently with a bow.
Taisha, what did you do with her after my little lesson?
I don't recall.
Try harder. Did you have her killed?
His father pursed his lips.
There was no reason for that. She learned her place, and had been well paid for her day's work, I seem to recall. I suppose the steward sent her on her way. I never thought to inquire.
On her way? Where?
Wherever whores go.
Tyrion's finger clenched. The crossbow whanged, just as Lord Tywin started to rise. The bolt slammed into him above the groin, and he sat back down with a grunt. The quarrel had sunk deep, right to the fletching. Blood seeped out around the shaft, dripping down into his pubic hair and over his bare thighs.
"You shot me?"
he said incredulously, his eyes glassy with shock.
"You always were quick to grasp a situation, my lord," Tyrion said. "That must be why you're the hand of the king."
You are no son of mine."
"Now, that is where you're wrong, father. Why, I believe I'm you, writ small. Do me a kindness now, and die quickly. I have a ship to catch."
For once his father did what Tyrion asked him. The proof was the sudden stench, as his bowels loosened in the moment of death.
"Well, he was in the right place for it," Tyrion thought.
But the stink that filled the privy gave ample evidence that the oft-repeated jape about his father was just another lie. Lord Tywin Lannister did not, in the end, shit gold. Samwell. The king was angry. Sam saw that at once. As the Black Brothers entered one by one and knelt before him, Stannis shoved away his breakfast of hard bread, salt beef, and boiled eggs, and eyed them coldly. Beside him, the red woman, Melisandre, looked as if she found the scene amusing.
"I have no place here," thought Sam anxiously, when her red eyes fell upon him. "Someone had to help Maester Aemon up the steps. Don't look at me. I'm just a Maester Stuart."
The others were contenders for the old bear's command, all but Bowen Marsh, who had withdrawn from the contest but remained Castellan and Lord Stuart. Sam did not understand why Melisandre should seem so interested in him. King Stannis kept the Black Brothers on their knees for an extraordinarily long time. "Rise," he said at last. Sam gave Maester Aemon his shoulder to help him back up. The sound of Lord Janus Slint clearing his throat broke the strained silence.
"Your Grace, let me say how pleased we are to be summoned here. When I saw your banners from the wall, I knew the realm was saved. There comes a man who ne'er forgets his duty. I said to good Sir Alistair, a strong man and a true king, may I congratulate you on your victory over the savages. The singers will make much of it, I know."
"The singers may do as they like," Stannis snapped. "Spare me your fawning, Janus, it will not serve you."
He rose to his feet and frowned at them all.
"Lady Melisandre tells me that you have not yet chosen a Lord Commander."
I am displeased. How much longer must this folly last?
Sire, said Burn Marsh in a defensive tone, no one has achieved 2/3 of the vote yet. It has only been 10 days.
9 days too long. I've captives to dispose of, a realm to order, a war to fight. Choices must be made, decisions that involve the Wall and the Night's Watch. By rights, your Lord Commander should have a voice in those decisions.
He should, yes, said Janus Slint. But it must be said, we brothers are only simple soldiers. Soldiers, yes, and your Grace will know that soldiers are most comfortable taking orders. They would benefit from your royal guidance, it seems to me. For the good of the realm, to help them choose wisely.
The suggestion outraged some of the others.
Do you want the king to wipe our asses for us too? Said Cutter Pike angrily.
The choice of the Lord Commander belongs to the sworn brothers, and to them alone, insisted Sir Denis Mallister.
"'Call, if they choose wisely, they won't be choosing me, eh?'
moaned Dolorous Ed.
Maester Aemon, calm as always, said, "'Your Grace, the Night's Watch has been choosing its own leader since Brandon the Builder raised the Wall. Through your Mormont, we have had 997 Lords Commander in unbroken succession, each chosen by the men he would lead.' A tradition many thousands of years old.
Stannis ground his teeth. It is not my wish to tamper with your rights and traditions. As to royal guidance, Janus, if you mean that I ought to tell your brothers to choose you, have the courage to say so.
That took Lord Janus aback. He smiled uncertainly and began to sweat. But Burn Marsh beside him said, Who better to command the Black Cloaks than a man who once commanded the Gold, sire?
Any of you, I would think, even the Kook.
The look the king gave Slint was cold.
Janus was hardly the first Gold Cloak ever to take a bribe, I grant you, but he may have been the first commander to fatten his purse by selling places and promotions. By the end he must have had half the officers in the City Watch paying him part of their wages. Isn't that so, Janus?
Slint's neck was purpling. Lies, all lies. A strong man makes enemies. Your Grace knows that. They whisper lies behind your back. Naught was ever proven. Not a man came forward.
Two men, who were prepared to come forward, died suddenly on their rounds. Stannis narrowed his eyes. Do not trifle with me, my lord. I saw the proof John Arryn laid before the small council. If I had been king, you would have lost more than your office, I promise you. But Robert shrugged away your little lapses. They all steal, I recall him saying. Better a thief we know than one we don't. The next man might be worse. Lord Petire's words in my brother's mouth, I'll warrant. Littlefinger had a nose for gold, and I'm certain he arranged matters so the crown profited as much from your corruption as you did yourself. Lord Slint's jowls were quivering, but before he could frame a further protest, Maester Aemon said,
Your Grace, by law, a man's past crimes and transgressions are wiped clean when he says his words and becomes a sworn brother of the Night's Watch.
I am aware of that. If it happens that Lord Janus here is the best the Night's Watch can offer, I shall grit my teeth and choke him down. It is naught to me which man of you has chosen— So long as you make a choice, we have a war to fight.
Your Grace, said Sir Denis Mallister, in tones of weary courtesy, if you are speaking of the wildlings,
I am not, and you know that, sir.
And you must know that whilst we are thankful for the aid you rendered us against Mance Rayder, we can offer you no help in your contest for the throne. The Night's Watch takes no part in the wars of the Seven Kingdoms. For 8,000 years...
I know your history, Sir Denis, the king said brusquely. I give you my word. I shall not ask you to lift your swords against any of the rebels and usurpers who plague me. I do expect that you will continue to defend the Wall, as you always have.
We'll defend the Wall to the last man, said Cutter Pike.
Cor are probably me, eh?" said Dolorous Ed in a resigned tone.